It is the Bob McCallum podcast, and I'm the aforementioned, and that is John Shannon, the featured contributor to this program.
Oh my goodness gracious! Is that a promotion?
No, I think you already
featured contributor.
Insisted on being listed as featuring John Shannon.
Yeah, contributor. That's different.
I think you asked for starring John Shannon.
Well, I did actually.
We settled with featuring.
Featuring. Well, you know what? Reach for the stars and then, you know, compromise.
Yeah. Maybe you get to reach a 7-foot ceiling. We are going to spend some time, the majority of our time today, talking about that soccer game last night. And I must admit this. I have become a fan of this team.
How do you not?
Well, I don't know how you don't.
Yeah.
I'm still not a fan of the game. And I thought last night's game was absolutely horrific.
From what perspective?
Well, the weather conditions and the field were such that I understand these are talented players. And they simply were not able to control the ball and perform the way we've come to expect them to perform. This looked like a kid's soccer game, you know, kick the ball.
That's a little harsh.
Well, that's what harsh. It looked like to me. In the worst case scenario, it looked like a decent MLS game. And both these teams are way beyond that skill set.
Mm-hmm.
So while I have nothing against Edmonton, nothing against the notion of them hosting games, nothing against the concept of playing games in weather conditions that will affect these southern countries. I agree with all that. That makes a lot of sense to me. At the end of the day, the quality of the play was inferior to anything we would have seen had it been in Toronto or on a normal grass field or, even if it's cold, not minus 15, not on a frozen AstroTurf field.
Yeah, actually, that's an interesting. You wonder if the quality had been a little different, had it still been on natural turf in those in that environment. You wonder if it'd be different.
I'd have to think so. Although,
frozen ground is frozen ground, Bob.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't remember if I've ever watched a game on natural turf that was frozen. Probably at some point, but for years they used to play games here in Toronto and BMO started out with an artificial surface, if I'm not mistaken, or they played games at the Rogers Center, which certainly had an artificial surface, and it was a lot harder than it is now. So
I know for some of those European teams that have come to town, they've rolled turf into, like a natural turf into Rogers at certain times. And you're right, BMO's has been back and forth, natural turf versus artificial turf, natural turf versus artificial turf. And now that the football team plays there too, it's a little different than what was anticipated. Remember, they were so protective early on at BMO about the quality of the turf for the MLS team there.
Yeah, sure. We're gonna chat about last night's game and the impact of it and the quality of it and what this means moving forward. Our pal James Sharman covered the game, the last two games in Edmonton, and is still there. And we'll hook up with him when we come back after these messages. Well, if you're a footy fan, then you don't need to know the news. You already know. If you're not a footy fan, you probably know anyway. A rather historic event in Edmonton last night as Canada beat Mexico 2-1 and moved to the top of the table as they try and qualify for the World Cup of Soccer. James Sharman joins us from snowy, chilly Edmonton. But at least you're inside now, Sharman. That's good, huh?
Yeah, that's an improvement. Yeah. In fairness, I kind of wimped out and sat in the press box yesterday, a true journalist would have, taken in the whole atmosphere outside in the stands, but not me. It was minus 15 or whatever it was, so no chance. But yeah, I'm nice and warm now, thanks.
Well, we understand the decision to hold these two games in Edmonton and why. And obviously it worked out. But what if the games were played in Toronto, for example, where the temperature was chilly, but not minus 15 as last night? Do you think Canada has now established itself as being good enough to win these kinds of games, regardless of the weather?
I think so. I think for the first time, perhaps ever, there's a legitimate three-team rivalry in this region in CONCACAF with the States, Mexico, and Canada. They're versatile. They adapt to their surroundings, and they can go head-to-head. I mean, they played Mexico earlier in the qualifying in the Azteca, tied 1-1 at the Gold Cup. And understrength Canada lost in the 99th minute by a single goal in Mexico. They beat the States in Toronto a couple of years ago now in a Nations League match. They tied the States. So, yeah, absolutely. This team is good enough to win these games. Now, that being said, you know, the field would have been a lot more even, I think, playing elsewhere. It did affect Mexico. But it also affected Canada too. You know, their pace, their attack, what wasn't great yesterday, and that's a large part because of the conditions. So I think personally we're at a point now where these players are good enough. They deserve, and they should be playing on good pitches in better conditions. You know, we shouldn't need the weather. They won the game, got the 3 points. Yep, it all worked out beautifully, of course. But I think this team, you know, needs to be surrounded by the best conditions as well.
Yeah. So they have a game against the U.S. At home still. If you had your choice, where would you play it then?
The rumors are Toronto now. John Herdman and the CSA are concerned about the travel. It's a really tough window next time, right? So your first game's in Honduras, then you're back home against the States, and then you're on the road to El Salvador. So the travel is a nightmare no matter where you are. Mm-hmm. And Toronto's slightly better than playing in BC, which would be the other option. And there's also concerns about the turf in BC as well. So listen, there's not a perfect option here. If it's in Toronto, it'd be maybe in the Rogers Centre. I don't think you can gamble at BMO Field in January in Ontario. I mean, you know, we have storms there here as well, right? So, I think Toronto is likely where it's going to be. Can you get 50,000 at the Sky at the Rogers Centre? Perhaps. But this is Canada, right? I mean, it's going to be tough no matter what.
So that brings me to the question. You've been in Edmonton for the two games. And the Oilers are playing pretty good hockey right now, and people are talking Oilers hockey, but what was the sense of the soccer team in the city?
Yeah, there's a slight buzz, I think. The Voyagers, which is Canada's supporters group, you know, moved in, descended upon the city. So wherever you are, you saw Canadian shirts, which is nice to see. You saw billboards and posters. And I think, you know, weather aside, I thought the city did support the team really well. 44,000 last night in what was, you know, really very cold conditions. Pretty good. I know they sold 50,000 tickets for that match. So there were some no-shows. But I think a large part of why the games were in Edmonton was because they wanted to show FIFA that this team could, that this city could host World Cup games. Assuming the city decides they want to do it as well. FIFA's in town. Victor Monteliani, the CONCACAF president, Canadian, was in town. So, you know, as much as the weather was a factor why they had it in Edmonton, it was also to show FIFA, yeah, we can do this. We can have fans in the stadium. But yeah, I thought there was a buzz. You know, it's still a hockey city, right? Obviously. Mm-hmm. But they love their sports and they supported it.
The quality of play, though, was very poor. And there's no doubt the weather played a factor in that. But as much of a factor of that is playing on artificial turf.
Yeah.
And, you know, this dates back to the 70s when the Toronto Blizzard were around. And the soccer world was horrified at the notion that in Canada we played soccer matches on artificial turf. And the ball, I mean, I know that the turfs are is much better than it is or was back then. Back then it was a thin layer of whatever on top of concrete. And the ball would bounce over everybody's head. But is there any other country in the world that uses artificial turf surfaces, or are there many at least?
There are some. I mean, listen, Northern Europe, right? They get some terrible weather as well, right? Yeah. And you get some turf fields there. You know, I grew up in England, and I think it was Loftus Road or Selhurst Park, which is a big club, Queen's Park Rangers, had a plastic pitch, you know, which was just ridiculed. Not anymore, of course. There aren't many, but in North America, you know, that's kind of what you have. But you're right. I mean, it did affect the play. I mean, we saw a couple of through balls in that first half in particular that Alphonso Davies or Tejan Buchanan would have got to if it was on grass, and it just skipped off. I mean, that was, to me, the disappointment. You know, we've come so far in this country regarding soccer, but from the global audience standpoint, they look at that last night and they see the gridiron marks on the pitch and like, what year are we in here? You know, we've got to be better.
Exactly.
It's simple as that. We have to be better and invest the money on proper pitches. But, you know, you can't have grass fields in Edmonton, right, in November, I guess.
So specifically about the game last night, to me, the first half, the referee probably blew his whistle more than I've seen in a long, long time.
It was awful.
And was that the Mexicans trying to be more physical than they normally are? Or what was that?
Yeah, they were very cynical, right? And so was Canada. I mean, Canada can play CONCACAF now as well as anyone, which is nice. They were very cynical. I think over 20 fouls were blown up in that first half. It was really horrible to watch. You know, each team was trying to prevent the other team from getting in any kind of momentum, which is what happened there. The referee also was calling a lot. Right? Let's be honest. You know, he wasn't allowing the lads to play. And early in qualifying, we saw referees letting the guys play a little bit more. So that was disappointing as well. It was not a great advertisement for football. If you had in that 44,000, there were a lot of newbies there, right? A lot of new fans, I think. I'm not sure they were sold in the game from that performance. It got better in the second half a little bit. But even so, I mean, it's minus 15, right? I mean, I don't care what sport you're playing. That's tough conditions on that turf. When Canada's built for speed as well, you can't really play with speed in those conditions. Every time I saw Davies with the ball, I kind of cringed. I can only imagine what his manager in Germany is thinking, like, wow, this guy could go down in this concrete, basically, and hurt himself. So, yeah, not a great game. You're right there, John. It was pretty awful to watch for much of it. But moments, you know, are what defines a match often, right? And we'll look back at seeing this classic played in Edmonton back in 2021. And let's be honest, that wasn't really the case.
Speaking of Davies, I mean, this guy is a world-class talent who is now, I'm sure, recognized by other countries around the world. Did you see Mexico doing something to try and neutralize him? Or was it just the conditions that prevented him from really doing anything notable during the game?
Well, both, but I thought Mexico did a real good job in that first half in particular. They played five at the back, you know, which helped defend the wide areas, and he had no space at all. I thought he was invisible for much of that first half, actually.
Yeah, it was.
So I think Mexico played really well in that regard. You know, the danger points for Canada, Tejan Buchanan on the one side, Alphonso on the other side, they were neutralized. And that's a good lesson for Canada to learn, too. So we saw in the second half, Alphonso drift inside a lot more, play more centrally. And that made a difference, I thought. But that's football tactics, right? And that's why this team in Canada is so versatile, that John Herbin will see these changes and make changes within the game to get his better players more involved. But Mexico's a good team, right? I mean, they're going to be, I can only imagine the Mexican media today, right? There's going to be a complete meltdown. 4 days after they lose to the States, they're their enemy. Once again, they're now tied for third or fourth place with Panama. My word, you know, but you know, don't rule them out. They're still Mexico. They're still a very good team, but they are not quite the force perhaps they once were, which is, again, it's all about timing for Canada right now. The States are growing as well. They're a young team. Mexico's not what it once was. Honduras, not close to what it once was. Panama, same thing. So it's all kind of fitting nicely now for what could be a qualification.
You mentioned Buchanan, but in many ways, what we always continue to talk about is Canada's depth and the growth of Canada's depth. That to me, James, I think is just as important as anything else, right?
That's the story, John. Yeah. I mean, we saw in that second half, Kyle Larin, who scored two goals, is now equal with Dwayne De Rosario as Canada's all-time leading scorer, plays for Turkey in Turkey for Beşiktaş. He gets taken off the field for Jonathan David, who is just tearing up Europe right now with Lille and scoring in the Champions League too. I mean, I know it's happened in qualifying before, but, you know, I can't think in recent memory, no, I mean, ever, that Canada's had that opportunity to replace one star striker with another star striker. We saw Jonathan Osorio come on in the second half. You know, Ozo's been around for years at CFC, a great servant, a really good player, can control the midfield. So, you know, this depth we're seeing out there says everything about the program at the moment.
Might that be Herdman's biggest challenge, is when you have players that are expected to play a lot, they only play 30 minutes, they only play 40 minutes, manage the egos more than anything?
Man management, but what one thing they keep pressing this team, when you speak to the players and the coaches, they keep pressing, we're a brotherhood, we're together, we're doing this for the greater cause. They're saying all the right things. At some point, you're right, when we get close to a World Cup, if they're going to get there, then we'll see how the egos handle, you know, being benched. But that's like any team, you know, international football, club football, it's all about rotation. You don't have your preferred starting 11. You start every single game. It depends on the opponent. So, you know, football's changed that way. You know, star players don't play every game. As simple as that.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make a controversy, but it might be a little different when you're playing in Turkey to fly home to Toronto, as opposed to if you're playing in Turkey and you have to go to, you know, Prague.
Yeah,
you know, it's a little different.
Oh, yes, big trip, right? Well, yeah. You know, the new kid, they just signed up, Ike Ugbo.
Ugbo, right? Yeah.
I mean, he played, what, 10 minutes in the two games? You know, so welcome to Canada. You know, it's it's minus 15 and you're sitting on the bench, where it's probably quite warm, actually, in fairness. But, you know, you got to get used to it. Simple as that.
Let's talk a little bit about Kyle Aaron, because I think he's sort of been lost in the shuffle here with all the excitement over the D-boys and how good they are. And this guy is a goal scorer and a real threat out there. Tell us a little bit more about him. It's not that we shouldn't know more, but tell us something that we maybe don't know.
Yeah, he came through Major League Soccer, and then he got the big move to Europe with Besiktas in Turkey, where his captain at Canada, Atiba Hutchinson, plays as well. Mm-hmm. And Besiktas is a big club, an Istanbul club. And listen, I mean, you can just, you know, imagine Turkish football, right? It's insane, right? That is high pressure. So when people talk about pressure in these qualifiers, well, these boys are used to it. Kyle Aaron is used to it playing at Besiktas. He's a player that can play by himself up top. Jonathan David cannot play that role just yet. So a different kind of player. He can also play off a player. He holds the ball up really well. And you know, very quietly, he's put together the greatest calendar year in Canadian soccer history. I think it's 13 or 14 goals now. In 2021, he's the highest goal scorer in CONCACAF qualifying as well. So, you know, at some point he'll move from Besiktas to maybe a more well-known club in regards to the Canadian soccer community, and he'll get more respect. But I thought he was outstanding yesterday. And even when he came on the field against Costa Rica, he was very, very good as well. So, yeah, he's pretty special. He's still in his early 20s. He's going to be around for a very, very long time. He is definitely part of the solution.
Talk to us a little bit about Turkish soccer, because I know nothing about it, as to where, like, how would you rate the quality there as compared to, well, say the Premiership?
Yeah. I mean, it's a level below. You know, football, it's a religion there, as I mentioned there. It's mm-hmm. It's incredible passion. It's quite controversial. You know, there's issues off the field there. But those Istanbul clubs, you know, Besiktas, Galatasaray is really the big one there. You know, you play in those matches, you know you're in a football match. I would say it's probably second tier in Europe, and that's first tier being, you know, England, Italy, Spain, Germany. And then below that, you have your France's, your Belgium, your Turkey's, around there, Portugal, probably in that kind of level as well. You don't see these guys go for long runs in the Champions League, but they qualify for the Champions League. And you might see the occasional knockout round game, but it's good football, make no mistake. You know, you make a good living there. And it's a great showcase for the big, big four leagues.
With the performance of this Canadian team, we know of the guys that are playing at a high level in Europe now. What do you think the chances are that someone else will be recognized off this Canadian team and get an opportunity that otherwise they haven't had internationally?
Yeah, it's going to happen. I mean, one guy that really stands out to me would be Alistair Johnston, who plays in Nashville right now. He's kind of come out of nowhere, this kid, right?
And tell you what, that was a hell of a move. He pounced on that first ball. to create the scoring opportunity on the rebound.
Yeah, that was, that's right.
It's something that was something out of nothing, really, in many ways.
Ochoa, the goalkeeper, didn't expect it.
Right.
None of us did. And it kind of skipped off the turf. He parried it. And then there's Larin to pounce. This guy, I tell you what, I mean, he's been a revelation in this qualifying campaign. Plays for Nashville and has really emerged the last couple of years. But, I mean, you hear him speak, he's so well-spoken. He's a great interview, you know, and listen, you guys know athletes don't make the best interviews often. This guy is, you get a chance, get him on your show, get him on your show. He'll talk your ear off. He's outstanding. He's a fullback, can play center back as well. I'm sure, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets over there in the next year or so to Europe from what he's doing right now. He's very tenacious. He loves to talk about the Canadian way. This team's showing real edge, right? There's been some scuffles and he's usually central to it as well. So the mainstream Canadian sports fans can probably relate to him. He's a little bit of hockey in Alistair Johnston, I think. So
you talk about the Canadian way. What did you make of late in the game, the physical nature of what happened? To me, you talked about how this team has learned to play CONCACAF soccer. Mm-hmm. We don't normally push back.
Yeah.
Or over the years, we haven't pushed back.
Canada's never been pushovers, right? They always have that kind of mentality, like, you know, if you're going to punch us, we'll punch you back harder. But they haven't been as cynical in the past. They won't be the purveyors of this.
Right.
Whereas now you're seeing them doing things that was done to them in years past. We see Milan Borjan, the goalkeeper, it seems every match around the half hour mark, he goes down with an ankle injury, right?
Yeah.
So the team can then get around the coach and reset. It's like, oh, here we go again. I saw Sam Adekubi do the same thing once there as well.
When he grabbed the ball after the first Mexican goal.
Yeah, exactly.
When he grabbed the ball.
What's going on here? It's going to kick off here, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the pushing and shoving's there for sure, right? But they're also willing to cynically foul as well. I've seen some guys dive. I mean, I hate diving in football, but in CONCACAF, if you ain't doing that, you're not going to be very successful. So, they're really buying into that, which is nice to see. To a certain degree, I mean, the purist in me doesn't like it, but you have to do it, as simple as that. So I think they're learning, they're maturing. We know, as a footballing nation, we're maturing. Craig Forrester often tells me how he'll be screaming his players, if you're in the box and you feel even any contact, go to ground, dive. He'd be telling his teammates that because they were so naive, they wouldn't do it. No, we're staying on our feet, Craig. Like, no, that's not how you win these games, unfortunately. So I think as a nation, we're maturing in that regard.
With James Sharman, we'll take a quick break and come back with more as Canada beats Mexico 2-1 last night in Edmonton. Back after these messages. With James Sharman, who is still in Edmonton, I assume flying out today, are you?
I am, yeah. Straight after this, I'm heading out.
When do they have to decide where the next home games will be played? Pretty quickly, I would think, huh?
Yeah, I believe before the end of the calendar year, they want to know where these games are being played. So, you know, Toronto's for sure. So it's basically Toronto and or, you know, Edmonton. Edmonton might get a handful of games, but we'll see. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Toronto ends up getting them all, to be honest with you. You know, I don't know that for a fact. But, I mean, they're leaving it pretty late at this point.
Where should Montreal be insulted because they aren't in the mix at this point?
Yeah, I found that strange, actually. I mean, that'd be a great venue, obviously. You know, a natural home base for France, for example, right? I don't know the details why that hasn't transpired. I mean, it's not cheap, right, to host World Cup games. You know, a lot of cities are scared off. You know, Vancouver was scared off. Again, I think when it comes to 2026, there'll be some cities that wish they'd gone a different direction because for all the nonsense that FIFA brings aboard, you know, it's a real showcase for your city.
Well, I was going to wait to bring this up, but since you started talking about it, with all the officials there, and now it looks like only Edmonton and Toronto have put in official bids for 2026. Vancouver, I guess, tried to get in late, and then
that was a rumor. Yeah, that's been debunked by some people, but that was a rumor. Yeah,
but in the end, is that a good thing? Only to have two cities as part of the World Cup system.
There's only going to be 10 games in Canada, right? Okay. Maximum 10 games. So, I mean, it's hard to spread it around too much. And that's, I mean, going to upset people, right? But let's be honest, you know, You know, Toronto is a world-class city, or close to a world-class city. You know, Vancouver is too, Montreal is, with respect to Edmonton and these other cities, great cities. But, you know, is it the greatest showcase in a global event? I'm not sure. You know, Toronto can do it. They have the hotels. Mm-hmm. They have the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Because when FIFA lands in a World Cup, right, they take over everything. You know, right. So there's no reason. I mean, listen, Edmonton could do it for sure. I'm sure they could. If they get a handful of games, fantastic. But I really think in the end, it could just be Toronto.
Refresh my memory. So this World Cup we're talking about, this North American World Cup, games in Canada, U.S. and Mexico?
Yeah. Right? 48 teams, right? That's the expanded World Cup, which is, well, we can talk about that if you want. But three host nations.
So if Canada is in, do they get any preferential treatment? In other words, so they'd have three games minimum, correct?
Yeah,
precisely. In their pool, yeah.
And would all of those games be in Canada, or is there no guarantee of that?
It's no. So what the last I heard was, so obviously their group games would be in Canada, obviously, and then Canada would probably get a couple of knockout games too. Hmm. I'm not sure how many. Maybe, well, obviously, it'd be more than a couple. But I believe from the quarterfinals onwards, it'll be in the States. So Canada will be getting round of 16 matches. It's a very common, I forget the actual process now because it's 48 teams, right? All these little mini groups. I think the groups are three, are they not?
I thought so, yeah. Yeah,
groups are three, right? So you're getting two home games for sure. But I believe they would keep Canada in that bracket to have all their games in home games unless they go beyond the round of 16.
The first three games that they play, which they're guaranteed to get,
two games would all be in Canada. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Yeah.
I was just wondering, I mean, I think overall the World Cup in 2015, the Women's World Cup that was in Canada, had to be viewed as a success.
Huge success, yeah.
So where does that fit into the politics of what happens for Canadian soccer in 2026?
Yeah, well, I mean, the way it kind of works is you host an under-20 World Cup, which Canada did in 2007, then a Women's World Cup, and then the Men's World Cup being the big, you know, big occasion. So it's all part of the process.
Okay.
And you know, obviously nowadays there's more and more joint bids happening for all these tournaments and, you know, Olympics too, right? Because of the monies involved. And it makes sense that North America would get one for the first time since 1994. 86 Mexico had it, of course, but for Canada the first time. So it's all part of the process, absolutely.
We talked about the recognition that these players are receiving, are getting internationally, because of Canada's success and where they might go as a result. And I know we talked about John Herdman, the head coach, the last time we visited. But with each victory here, the profile of this program increases. I guess the buzz increases internationally. And you have to wonder how long it'll be before he gets an offer for a significant job somewhere else. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, I spoke to John in depth actually just before this window. And, you know, he's talking about why he took the job to begin with, right? And, you know, he had a good thing at the women's team. But he got to a point where he realized that for that program to advance, the men's team had to be successful. Because despite winning two bronze medals, as he said it, he'd get the same envelope on his desk each year with the same budget. He got no more money despite how well they did. He realized for that program to improve, he needs more money. And for more money in the game, you need men to qualify for the World Cup. And that was his inspiration to kind of move to the men's side of things. You know, there were rumors back then, too, that England had offered him the job for the women's team. He used that as leverage. That was one of the scuttlebutt at the time. He's a smart guy, it's John Herdman, right? You know, if that was an opportunity, I'm sure he would have used it. But he wanted to get into men's football at some point. He had an option, too, to get into a pretty high-profile MLS team as well at that time. And jump into the men's side of things. So I think you're right there, Bob. I think long-term, he wants to get into men's club football, but when that will be, 2026 home World Cup, that's a big, big, you know, opportunity for a coach to showcase himself and to be the man in Canadian football for a very long time. But, I mean, he could move before then, but I can really see if he qualifies for this World Cup, there could be offers coming in. But it would be a step back, right? If he goes to Europe, it wouldn't be for a head coaching job. You know, from Canada, I don't think it'll be an assistant job, but I'm not sure he wants an assistant job. So the next jump could be MLS as a head coach, and then back to Europe.
So let me ask a question that I don't know the answer to. I don't know if John does. Could he get an MLS job and stay on as head coach of the national
team? Sure.
It's happened before in international football, having the two jobs. I don't think so, personally. Not nowadays. You know, a head coach job in men's professional football is a 24/7 job. And the way he operates too, right? He is a workaholic. You know, he's throws himself into that work. So I don't think he could do it personally.
You know, I mean, in the past, the Americans have always, didn't Bill Bradley do this? Didn't he do both jobs? And Bruce Arena?
Bill Bradley did, yeah, I believe for a short time, but it's just, it isn't feasible nowadays. You know, I mean, with international football, from a scouting standpoint, you're around the world continuously. And just from the club standpoint, even though the football directors now who kind of take care of the contracts and stuff, that's changed a little bit. But it's very difficult. It can happen on the short term. You might see that short term. But long term, I don't see it being feasible.
Actually, you just tweaked me to another question about, so we're seeing the men's team grow. We've obviously seen the women's team grow and succeed and thrive. Are we seeing the growth on the administrative side of Soccer Canada too?
I'm not sure we are. Yeah.
You know, you have to think that's going to change too, right?
It has to. I mean, Peter Mentopoli, who was, you know, one of the main men on the CSA, he's now taken over. He's in charge of the World Cup side of things. So they must replace him at some point. You know, it's been so professionalized on the field since Herdman arrived. It has to sometime filter down off the field as well, because there are still issues there. You know, there is not a big organization. They are understaffed. It does need to be professionalized, absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, but what we're seeing right here for the first time, I think, in my lifetime, is a real sense of a nation that is waking up and recognizing not just the sport, but the quality of play that Canada is producing. And when that happens, you have to think that sponsorship dollars follow. And if they're not out there mining those dollars, they should be. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's money out there. There's always money out there. You got to find it. And you know, qualifying for a World Cup would be a tipping point, I'm sure, for the program. It happened for the States in 1994. That was piggybacked with the MLS being born, of course. That was part of the deal for them to get the World Cup. But yeah, I mean, a qualification for a World Cup, then you know, private business starts waking up and starts putting money into this program. Mm-hmm. You know, it's next December, right? So it's only a year from now, the World Cup. You know, don't forget that. And then it's four more years and it's in Canada and the States. So it's a huge opportunity. You know, I've been doing this sport for 20 years. You know, often you've been smashing head against a brick wall, it seems, but people are awakening, that is for sure. Yeah. And, you know, people like Alfonso Davis driving the bus, so to speak, you know, global brands now, which we've never had before.
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, I mean, the gold standard of that is Hockey Canada, has been for a long time, of how it's happened. Basketball now seems to have gotten its act together in so many ways. It just appears to be a natural progression that soccer would be able to do it, particularly with Utah. When you talk about guys like Davies and Buchanan and Lauren doing on the turf.
You tell me. I mean, obviously there's money out there, but there's only so much, you know, in sport. So if Canada's taking this money, say they get in the World Cup, where's it coming from? Is hockey suffering? Is basketball suffering? Is it baseball? Where's the private interest in Canadian sports? Where's that money coming from?
You know what? Corporate sponsors, if they fall in love with a sport and they fall in love with the attachment that they find money. It doesn't get usurped from one sport to the other. They find money. I guarantee you that there are meetings on Zoom or in person in 10 companies and 10 ad agencies right now saying, how do we get on this bandwagon? And who do we talk to get on this bandwagon? And that's step one, I think. Now you need to have the other side, the Soccer Canada side, be able to be receptive and work with these sponsors. That's why I asked the question.
Yeah.
Well, historically, I can tell you too that what happens here is it's the classic Coke-Pepsi scenario. If Pepsi hears that Coke is interested in something, then automatically Pepsi is interested. If Molson Brewery is interested in something, then Labatt immediately sticks their nose in. And years ago, I remember talking to the then president of Labatt Brewery, who said he had $20 million worth of sponsorships in his drawer that they never executed a plan for. They never did anything with. Mm-hmm. He just got them to keep them away from the other brewery. So that's the kind of philosophy I think you're going to see here, and probably already are seeing, is companies saying, all right, maybe we should get into this before they get into it. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to Soccer Canada to determine, you know, how do we play one off against the other?
Well, the other question, James, is what does One Soccer do in all this? Where does One Soccer fit into this?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're a huge role, right? They're a big player. I mean, Media Pro, this Spanish-based production company, have invested a lot of money over a decade, right, mm-hmm. into this. Now, they realize they need more carriage, right? They partnered with Sportsnet, obviously, for these games. And then moving forward, that must continue. They want to get on their various cable carriers too, right? They're on TELUS now, I believe, but that's it at the moment. You know, they're going to invest money into Canadian soccer, right? The CPL, Canadian Premier League, is a big reason why they're around. They've got to grow that as well. So, you know, enormous. What I find interesting, actually, is, you know, this past week I've seen a story on Sky Sports about John Herdman. I've seen The Guardian do a story on Canada. You know, so the world is taking notice now from a media standpoint. So you would think the sponsorships will follow suit as well. But yeah, you know, we're in a good place. You know, you got this devoted channel in One Soccer to soccer in this country, and it's just started out, right? And obviously they start out and the pandemic hits, awful timing, but I know they're very committed. So I think everything bodes really well if we can all manage it properly, you know, and listen, for that to happen, you got to professionalize off the field.
You mentioned the CPL. I mean, they're below MLS. They're, I don't know whether they're even a feeder system for MLS, but in some ways, yes. Mm-hmm. Is there growth potential for them as a result of this?
Oh, well, I mean, general interest in soccer, right? Get more fans out to their games. And again, it's hard to judge them right now because of COVID. No, the stadiums are only like, you know, a fraction full for that reason.
Sure.
But it's key, you know, name me one successful soccer nation who hasn't got his own domestic league, right? There isn't any. So, you know, you had to have that. And right now it's very much in its infancy and it's much below MLS. Although we've seen some great results for CPL teams against MLS teams in the Canadian Championship. It can happen. The top teams in CPL are decent outfits, you know, but it's a very, very young league. And with young league, there's growing pains. What they need is that player, that one player, to show that he's made the move through the whole pyramid, right? Through MLS to Europe. That's what they need. And that's what it will happen at some point. There's good young players playing in the CPL.
So you believe there is room for a domestic league?
I hope so.
One of the great art. Yeah, but hope and think are two different words.
I know. Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. Listen, I mean, the demographics in this country are changing all the time, right? It is becoming more of a soccer oriented demographic, I think, although I've been told that for 20 years now,
right?
Continuously, you know, the growth's been very, very slow. I think you're right. Maybe it is hope. But, you know, you've seen some of the Halifax pulls out 6,000 fans a game, you know, for their CPL matches. That's pretty decent. That's a good start. So, yeah, absolutely. But a World Cup would be key to get those mainstream fans. The match on, the match on Friday, Costa Rica, I noticed it was 49,000 fans. For me, it wasn't that loud. I think there were a lot of people taking in for the first time who weren't the typical soccer audience. You know, you had the Voyagers who were loud, that was great. But for 49,000 people, it wasn't as loud as BMO Field was with 20. So I think you got a lot of new eyeballs on the sport, and hopefully they'll be drawn in through this whole journey.
And last night was different crowd-wise, noise-wise?
It's a little bit more. There are more Mexicans.
Yeah, oh, okay.
That's a big reason, right? You know,
So there was a good Mexican contingent there?
There was, yeah, from what I could see. It's kind of typical Canadian soccer. They were trying to remove all the snow from the seats before the match, and they did like two sections only, and of course that was the Mexican section. So once again, we're appealing to the enemy here. And so some of the old Canadian players I spoke to just were shaking their head saying, yeah, here we go again. Let's just make them feel comfortable.
Go ahead, John.
No, I'm just I had a couple of more questions actually about the game last night. The Mexican comeback late in the game. What was that? Was that as much them finally realizing that there's urgency, or was that our team hitting the wall?
Yeah, I mean, often you watch football and, you know, when a team's up late in the game, they sit back tactically, they sit back, that they welcome the pressure. And that was part of it. And Mexico were just desperate. That's the word, desperate. Given what they're going to face back home today and what the coach could be fired today. Simple as that, right? So they were desperate and they were throwing everything at Canada. And boy, they came close, right? That save by keeper Boyan on the line there. It was some nerve-wracking minutes, right? But it just happens in football. It just seems one team's more urgent when they're down a goal or two, right? And it made for a great finish, that's for sure.
Actually, you know, when you talk about that, when the ball went close to the goal line, the only thing I could think of is, thank goodness, no VAR.
Yeah, you know, but it's funny because CONCACAF just announced they're going to bring VAR into the qualifiers starting in January.
Oh, really?
Which is so CONCACAF. I don't know why they didn't do it for the entire... They did it at the Gold Cup. They did it for Nations League games, but for some reason, the biggest tournament there haven't been doing it. I don't know why. I'll find out why. But so it's coming back, which actually might be handy of Canada playing on the road in some of these countries.
Yeah.
Last one from me. We used to spend probably an inordinate amount of time when Canada played international matches in Canada. Or even an MLS team played, if a Greek team came over or a Greek side came over, and you knew that the predominance of the attendance was going to be, the fans were going to be rooting for Greece, even though they, you know, they're transplanted Greeks who came to
Canada. That was the World Basketball Championship, Bob. That was the World Basketball Championship.
Well, everything, you know, this attachment to the nation of your heritage, as opposed to the place where you live. I wonder how much of that could change with the success of this Canadian program. Do you have any sense of that?
Yeah, I mean, a winning team changes everything, right? If you move to Brazil from Italy when you're five, you're becoming a Brazil fan, right? Because they're a good team. Then they compete all the time. Yes, we're not there yet, though, right? I remember the El Salvador game at BMO Field. That was, the El Salvadorians were way louder than the Canadian fans. And I'm not sure they outnumbered them, but it was pretty close. Mm. But then the following match, Panama, it has switched, right? So it's still a big issue, but I'm with you. I think the more mainstream fans the game converts, Canadians, that will change the narrative completely, because that's always been the biggest complaint from players, is that, man, we play Jamaica or whoever it was, and it's like going to Kingston and we're playing a varsity. You know, it's just and in the past, the CSA have, like I mentioned before, have really kind of appealed to the opponents. Now that is changing now, in fairness. But yeah, I think all about winning football and getting national brands like Atiba Hutchinson, like Alfonso Davies, guys that kids can watch playing overseas now on their TV on a Saturday morning.
Right.
And he's Canadian. He's one of us. So, yeah, it will change. I'm certain of it, but we're not quite there yet.
How much of a shock was the American-Jamaica draw yesterday?
Well, I mean, we saw Jamaica draw Canada on that surface, right? It's awful. It's hard to play. And Jamaica actually is a very good team. They've had a terrible campaign so far. They've got a bunch of new players coming in. Who are now slowly nesting in. They're going to be a force, Jamaica, down the road. So they're a good team in Canada, and the States are like Canada, a young team that are growing and learning. So, you know, a point's a point, that they're fine with that. It's a tough place to play in that field. I mean, that was a cabbage patch once again. So if you're a good player, if you're a purveyor of good football, keeping on the deck, good luck trying to play there.
When do we get a sense of what kind of roster that Herdman will be able to put out for the January games?
Yeah, it will be in January, right? I mean, listen, the good news is that in Germany, they shut down for a few weeks, right, over Christmas. So Alfonso should be healthy and fresh. I would think it'd be a very similar squad that you just saw coming out. Yeah, very similar.
And do you get a sense that part of that is that they're a band of brothers?
A band of brothers, yeah, exactly. Yeah, they really believe in themselves. And Herdman said himself, you know, when I spoke to him, when he first took over 3.5 years ago, that was so many divisions in that squad. There were fights, like legitimate fights breaking out. The Spanish-speaking guys were over there. The Scottish-based guys were over here. It was a broken squad. And that's been his first job, to get them together. And at least they're saying the right things right now. Everything I hear is that they are very, very close, a close-knit group, and it's been a big reason why they've been successful.
Well, we wish you a safe, uneventful flight home, and you'll be able to dig into one of your pies when you get back.
Oh, and I'm afraid I make too many pies. I don't eat them.
I'm sure you missed them.
What's the website?
Showmansproper.ca.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
You know, we love you for coming on with us. We appreciate it greatly. And we'll talk down the road as we continue to follow this extraordinary voyage that this Canadian team is taking us on. Thank you, James.
Thanks, guys. Look forward to it. Cheers.
James Sharman. We'll come back and wrap it after these messages. Our thanks to James Sharman for joining us. Always a pleasure. There's nobody in this country that
makes pies like him.
What makes pies like him and analyzes the game better, I don't think.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you do have to give Edmonton some credit for almost 95,000 people.
I have no issue with that, John. You're making it sound like...
No. I'm extolling a compliment to the people of Edmonton for their fanatic attendance at in rather difficult circumstances.
Well, they sold like 95,000 tickets, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, so let me ask you this. If the games were in Toronto, of course, if they were at BMO, they couldn't sell that many because there aren't that many seats. But if they were at the Rogers Centre, would they have come close to selling 95,000 tickets, do you think?
Yeah, I do. I do now.
You do, huh?
I do now, yeah. I think that because like people like you, people like me, that we have created an attachment for this soccer team. There is something to be said about recognizing names now. And James touched on it. You know, the fact that on Saturday morning or Sunday morning, I can see Davies play in Germany. I can see some of the other guys play in other leagues in Europe. I think that's a big.
Well, you got to go find it. And I mean, I would never be that guy. I would admit, but if I flip on my television set and Alphonso Davies' team happens to be on,
right,
there's a good chance I'm going to stick with it for at least a bit.
Bayern Munich, right?
Well, I mean, I might do it. Anyway, I wanted to address something on the Toronto Maple Leafs, and not to sound like a Toronto-centric, but this team has won 9 out of their last 10.
Mm-hmm.
A shaky start to the year where there were all kinds of questions about what might happen, who might get fired. And I am not convinced at all that this is enough of a, there's enough balance on this team to be a Stanley Cup competitor. I'm not anywhere near that. But what I will say that is intriguing is a team that was built ostensibly for offensive dominance and to hell with defense, is about as good defensively right now as any team in the National Hockey League, maybe better than anybody.
Well, who do you think the MVP of this team is?
Well, right now it's a goaltender.
You're right. Jack Campbell has been spectacular. And if Jack Campbell wasn't playing at this level, we'd be having a lot more discussion about what's wrong with the Maple Leafs. That's how good he's been. If, it's almost, and this is harsh to say, it's almost been a blessing early on that Peter Mrazek got hurt and there was no decision for Sheldon to be able to decide who was going to be his goaltender. And Jack Campbell has taken lead and done a magnificent job with it. They are going to have to find a second goaltender to carry the load. And hopefully they must be hopeful it's Mrazek at a certain point.
Don't buy
into that. You can't play 75 games.
Yes, you can. No, you can't. Of course you can.
No, you can't.
Pitchers can pitch complete games and goaltenders can play every game. It's nonsense. This is nonsense that hockey people have come to this conclusion. It's absolutely ridiculous. If a guy is hurt, okay, he doesn't play.
Right.
That's different. But giving a guy, a goaltender, the night off because you're afraid he's tired, that's ridiculous.
So Bob, actually, it has nothing to do with the games. In many ways, if you're going to give a guy like Jack Campbell off, let's make sure he doesn't practice. Does he need practice? The biggest issue right now in hockey when it comes to goaltending is that they work too hard in practice. And because they, the goaltending
I didn't say anything about practice.
No, no,
no. You brought up the practice thing. I'm saying,
yeah.
If you've got a number one, what do you want? You want him to practice or do you want him to play games? We're going
to
get
I want him to play games. But, you know, when you end up with, when you end up with a goaltending department, they're going to say, well, you know, Jack's got to work on something. And that's not just this team. That's every team where goaltending gurus and goaltending assistants and goaltending video guys and goaltending goaltenders end up trying to make guys work on days where maybe they should take the day off. That's what used to happen. Goaltenders would say, nah, you know, and I'm not even putting the pads on today.
Good.
But you know what? You watch teams in practice. Goaltenders work hard, almost as hard in practice now as they do in games.
Well, that's because you got too many damn coaches and you got goaltending coaches right now.
There's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for that.
You know, and they want to, and they have their philosophies.
And they want to justify their jobs.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah.
My goaltender would play every game of the year. Yeah. Every game of the year.
That's not going to happen.
If he doesn't want to practice, fine. Don't practice. I don't care. I want, if you're the best, I want you in the net when it counts. Period. End of story. But this team, you know, I agree. Campbell has been the point of difference.
Mm-hmm.
And if he hadn't been this good, well, I guess my point is you need good goaltending to be good all the time, no matter how good your team is. But this team defensively is playing okay. They're not scoring goals the way I think they were built. They're getting very little from anything other than the first line offensively. A little bit, well, first and second line. And although the third line has pitched in the last couple of games. But you keep shutting teams out, you're going to win. It's as simple as that. And you can quote me on that, John.
I'm going to write that down. McCowan's word of wisdom today.
Shut them out. Win. You won't lose.
That's right.
All right, we got to get out of here. We've got more to come later in the week. We hope you'll join us for that. Thanks for watching or listening, as the case may be, whether it's on the podcast or on SiriusXM 167. For John Shannon, Bob McCowan,